A quick note before we begin our today's episode. The recording quality is not as per regular episodes of AudioGAN. However, the conversation is so enriching that hope it compensates for the loss of audio quality. I'm sure you'll attune yourself after listening to a couple of minutes.
Welcome to AudioGAN with Kedar Nimkar, a podcast that documents insightful conversations with Indian designers, artists, musicians, writers, thinkers, and creatives of all types. Catch us on iTunes or visit audiogan.com for more GAN sessions. Here's your host, Kedar Nimkar.
This is the 200th episode of AudioGAN. My heartfelt thanks to all guests for being on the show. I appreciate you putting your efforts and giving your time for this small project of mine to document Indian designers and artists. Today, I have Sudhir Patwardhan with us on AudioGAN. I celebrated 100th episode with India's design hero, B.V. Doshi, and I'm equally thrilled and excited to celebrate this 200th episode with another legend, Sudhir Patwardhan, one of India's finest painters. So thank you, sir, for giving your time, and it's a real, real honor to have you on AudioGAN.
Thank you, Kedar. It's my pleasure.
And I've come up with a few questions, mainly to document and understand your thought process, your philosophy and your perspective towards art in general and some bits of painting as well. So the first thing which I want to ask is, like most legendary musicians talk about having emptied their mind to reach like a higher state of consciousness while performing, like Bismillah Khan or Kumar Gandharva. These people say that you have to empty your mind, right? So is this the same process while painting? I mean, a painter seems to be filled with thoughts, contradictions of the world, conflicts. So if you can start there, that in general, what's the thought process? And in particular with you as well, what inspires or what kicks off a painting?
Yeah, sure thing. I would say that for speaking for myself, my process starts at two points simultaneously. One is, of course, the experience of the external world, the world around me. I'm continuously responding to that world and observing and emotionally involved in the life of people around and things like that. So that is one source, that is one point from which any painting hobby would start. The other point, equally important, is some inner need. And this inner need is a need for some kind of rhythm, some kind of structure, or some kind of order, you might say. So this is independent of one's experience of the external world as such. This is an inner need. But as the painting progresses, these two tend to come closer together. And at some point, I think they actually come together. And that is a point of a kind of heightened awareness. It is a heightened awareness of the world with all its contradictions, as you said, and all its conflicts. But it's also a heightened awareness of order, some kind of order that has come from the artist. So this, you might say that this form of heightened awareness is somewhat akin to the kind of experience that you mentioned musicians, they speak about. But I think painting is quite different in the sense it is a much long drawn out process. It's not like a 1 hour performance or something. So it's probably quite different from that. And for me, it is quite different from that.
Mm-hmm. But is there any, I mean, does every painting go through the same sort of process, or it depends on, are there any other parameters apart from these two which you mentioned?
Well, for me, mostly because my paintings are essentially to do with the world around me, people's lives that I observe. So for me, this becomes more or less the way in which things happen. But there are other ways. There are other ways. For example, there may be some images that come to you not from the outside world, but they come to you. You really don't know where they come to you from. They may be dream images. They may be kind of hallucinations. They may be just something that just occurs to you. Now, the origin of this image may not be, it's somewhere in your subconscious. So then the process may be somewhat different. There is also a time when you're reading, for example, you're reading some literature or you're reading poetry, and that also might inspire some kind of imagery within the artist. So various ways in which a painting can start. So one of these, but for me, predominantly it is a reaction or a kind of dialogue between the external world and my inner self.
So you said, and it's not like a 1 hour concert, or it's not like it has got a longer time frame.
Yes.
So is it possible to start off, I mean, how frequent does it happen that you start off with one thought, but the end is completely different because of circumstances, or because of your thought process, or because of your reinterpretation of the same thing?
That happens quite often. That happens. I mean, that is almost the rule rather than the exception. Your starting point is one, but where it takes you from there, because it's a dialogue between your understanding, your creative kind of need. So because it's a kind of dialectic between various things, it will take its own course, and you have to allow it to take its own course. Only then will it actually reach that point where you feel that yes, now you have reached that kind of awareness where something new is being said. So it does happen very often. You start from somewhere and you're always moving in a direction that you cannot predict, you do not know.
So I'm intrigued. I've asked this question multiple times to other people also, but then how does a painter know when to stop?
Yes, that's an interesting question. It's always an interesting question. There are times when you definitely know that, yes, what you wanted to say, and not in the sense that this is what you want to say. You reach that point and say, yeah, no more. I have said enough, and this is exactly where I want to leave it. But there are times when it's not as clear as that. And then usually you make some mistake, you go more ahead, and you realize that you're taking it a bit too far, you should retract. So there are various kind of complications in that act of finishing. But if you are lucky, more or less, you will be told by the painting itself that, okay, now stop, this is it.
I think we'll circle back to this question in the later part also. The reason why I was asking you that it gradually improves is because your early works in the 70s, where, as in, like, I was going through one of the videos where you showed your the entire journey from the 70s, is that earlier you had just the subject, and then later on you started bringing in other aspects into your painting. There was a lot more context along with the subject, and then I mean, one of the recent exhibition which I saw at NGMA, the more recent ones are fully busy, and there are a lot of different things happening on the canvas. So is this, like, what made you make this shift, and why things have started becoming sort of busy in the painting itself? And is it a part of the continuing talk with the people or want to share? Yeah.
Yes. In a sense, you're right that my early work usually had a single figure, a single human figure. And all this figure was usually of a worker or a person that I've seen on the street, something like that, usually an ordinary person. And all the drama was actually in the figure. The way in which I related to that single figure. After some time, I started to feel that it is necessary for me to include that person's context, his life's context, where what he does, you know, what is his social position, where does he stay, or what is he doing, is he sitting in a restaurant, what is the background there. So I wanted to include more things, and not only along with that, more people also. So he was not then alone in that frame. There are other people in the frame with whom he was also establishing some kind of relationship, he or she, as the figure may be. And I was also establishing a relationship with multiple figures. Now this kind of complicates the or makes the structure much more complex than when you are handling single figure. So the structure became more complex. After this, there was a period when I even moved even further back, so that I was seeing much more of the city. So it might be multiple buildings, multiple flyovers, multiple things. And so there were multiple figures, so that it was not about one single figure or one single human being, but it was about a whole social situation. So when I did this, I was moving back, I was becoming more of an observer rather than being very closely associated with that one figure. So this made the whole structure more complex. But I have always returned. So it is not like I have only moved from single figure to more complex things. I have always returned to painting single figures, even small paintings of individual faces. So this connection, this kind of pendulum movement between going very close to a single figure and going far and seeing a whole social context or a whole city. So this pendulum movement has continued. So I moved between painting single figures, then I moved back to painting whole city or something like that. Again, I moved in and paint single figures. So this intimacy and distance connection, you know, a dialogue between intimacy and distance.
But why did you start bringing in context of the subject also?
One thing is that my experience was like that. The reason why initially I was painting a single figure was that I was projecting my feelings into one figure. So it was a kind of emotional, psychological need to connect, to relate to one figure outside of yourself, mm-hmm. a figure of another class or something. Then my understanding of this situation grew, and I realized that he is part of a whole lot of relationships and connections and social memory. He is not just one single human being. He is part of a whole. And to understand that, I need to incorporate all those elements as much as I can. And therefore, that movement behind was, I was moving behind. And so, but again, as I said, if you move too much away from the human figure to paint the city, then you lose contact with individuals. Mm. Then you feel that I need to get back and get in touch with individuals. So that is why this to and fro movement continues. And there are different ways of understanding life in a sense. You know, you want to talk about a single life, you want to talk about a whole society, you want to talk about the city, you want to talk about so many things. So it's different ways in
which. But would you attribute this sort of a pendulum because of empathy, or say because of just expanding consciousness? Because the more, like we say in Karma Yoga, na, you keep doing and then you get some sort of a higher degree of awareness. So what would you attribute it more to?
I think it is a realization that no single kind of approach to life can give you a fuller understanding of it. You need multiple approaches. And one is continuously doing that. You know, in one's own life, one has a kind of objective scientific approach to certain things. Certain things one has to appreciate, or certain things one has to understand their emotional tone, their emotional quality. Certain things one has to understand at a slight distance, so that there are friendships which you will keep at a certain level. There are others that become very intimate. No? All these various things are leading you to an understanding of the complexity of your own life and the life around you. So I think you need multiple entry points into understanding well, understanding the surrounding around you, and understanding yourself also. You cannot understand yourself also seeing from only one viewpoint. So that is the reason why these multiple ways in which we approach.
And Sudhir sir, like in one of your interviews I was reading, you mentioned that it's about what is possible to communicate and what is not. The artist starts by saying something and then he wipes and starts anew. So even this reflects the pendulum approach which you said, right?
Yes.
So all this put together, I was trying to philosophically connect it with Mumbai because that's where your major work is. And even Mumbai gets washed away with like every wave hitting the island and starts afresh. So is it because of that or any other attributes? And then if you can further explain why Mumbai also.
Yeah. This aspect of doing something, then wiping it, then doing it again, I think is part of the creative process. Creative process is, the energy for creative process is not unidirectional. It moves you in a certain direction and you have to critique it also. Along with, you know, there is a certain energy in wanting to do it in a certain way, do something. But then you have to critique it. You have to look at it critically and then it is like two steps forward and you take one step back. Then you move in another direction. So it is that kind of process. And the other part that you mentioned was about Mumbai, that is very true. That in the sense, you know, Mumbai has this ability to spring back to life after every crisis. And that is very inspiring about the city. But in a sense, I feel that people of Mumbai do not have a choice. The life here is so difficult, so hard, that it's not possible to just lay back and cry over a crisis. You have to get back and you have to get back to work after every floods, after every rains or any natural disaster. We see that immediately in the next day, people are struggling to get back to work. Even now, when with this pandemic, you see that people are lining up for 2 hours to be able to get into a bus, to be able to go to work. So this struggle that people here have to go through is something that is not of their choice, like they cannot do without it. But this is one kind of trouble. But the other kind of crisis that are more disturbing are the kind of sectarian violence, communal violence, you know. So when that happens, then it becomes even more disturbing because you feel that the kind of cosmopolitan and multilingual, multiracial cultural spirit of Bombay, you know. So that spirit that we talk about of getting back and getting back to work, somewhere you feel that that spirit is being eroded because of these ugly kind of things that are entering people's psyche. And it becomes more difficult to handle those for a painter. But you're right that part of the reason why you want to continuously try and get back is what you learn from a city like that.
So, I mean, this as you truly said, it just keeps bouncing back. So it's transmuting rapidly all the time. So like, how do you pick or how did you pick subjects to paint? I mean, I have just two examples to just take equally important issues like the corporate towers threatening to take over the mills and at the same time, the riots. So like, how did you manage to like handle the anxiety of expressing these equally burning issues and yet make like the iconic pieces of art. So if you can take some example and explain, please.
Well, any significant work of art, or iconic work as you call, is born out of pain and anxiety. And it is in trying to deal with these that an artist will evolve some complex forms and structures that can hold. Ultimately, it is a question of being able to hold these conflicts within your composition or within your painting structure. So that is the struggle that every artist, and that is for me, the struggle that I have to go through. Now, the examples that you have given of conflict are so important. Now, and the change that happened after the mills closed down, one has tried to understand that and one has tried to come to terms with that. In some senses, one understands that, you know, change is inevitable. So the mills were there for 100 years. Something had to change. They closed down. Something new has come up. So this one can accept. But if there has been injustice, for example, loss of jobs, people have not been paid, and then crores of rupees have been made on land deals, and land which was given to the mill owners at a pittance by the government, leased to the government, by the government. Over that, these people have made huge amounts of profits. And also mainly the fact that Bombay has developed in a way not that it was right for Bombay as a city or for the majority of people, but it has developed purely in the last 20, 30 years, purely on the basis of a profit motive. So these things one tries to understand and one tries to build that into, tries to make a statement about that. For example, the lower current painting that I have, you know, there is a closed mill on one side, there is a high tower coming up on the other side. Now, this contrast between that and then that lower current stone bridge that was there. Now, and the life of these people going on. So, ordinary people will just continue their life. So, you can identify with that and you realize how much of a struggle it is for them. But you also want to critique what is the overall way in which development is happening. So, that is also part of what you were trying to say.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned about holding that thought. It seems to be like a painful journey. So, why does it have to be, like, I mean, what makes it, why do you hold it then? Just to express that?
Holding, what I meant was that, you know, you're doing a work of art, you're making a work of art. Now, that work of art must be able to contain, hold in the sense, contain all that you put inside it. So there may be anger, there may be love, there may be conflict. All these things, there must be, it has to contain this. Now, if it is only overflowing all the time, then a work of art is like a vessel, you know. And the vessel, what you put into it, you put in everything that you experience in life into it. But if it is continuously overflowing, then it does not become a successful work of art. That work of art, to become complete, it must contain all that within itself. In that sense, it must hold. Only then does it become a complete work of art. Only then does it give you that full aesthetic.
Very, experience. Very beautiful. And like, it's amazing. how did you pick subjects? Because both are equally, so was there any thought process to pick one over the other, or?
Various things. Now, from the earlier in the 70s and 80s, I used to paint a lot of people who were from the mill area. Then the mills closed down, then I also had moved to Ghana. So then that subject had fallen. That was not a subject that I was doing. I was painting more of drama, suburbs and all. But then the changes that have started to happen in the mill lands after 90s, the kind of development that started there, and the kind of infrastructure with lack of infrastructure, the kind of building, you must be knowing about Charles Correia and so many important architects that put forward a plan for the redevelopment of the mill lands, which had considered the need of the city as a whole and the need of the people that had been displaced, that had lost their jobs, all that. Now, ultimately, the politicians and ministers put this aside and they developed the land according to their own needs and profits. So, you can see today that it is such a mess, that whole place. Traffic is a mess, everything is such a mess. So, this kind of development is something that you cannot stay quiet about. And you are an artist, you are not a journalist, or you are not a sociologist to write an essay on it. So, as an artist, you feel the need to paint that city which seems to be now crumbling with lack of infrastructure, which seems to be like not city that was earlier or that could have. So that is one aspect. The other one that you mentioned was riot. So riot, after the riots happened, for a long time, it was very difficult to come to terms with what had happened. And it was very difficult to paint also, because to be able to say something which at least suggests the horror of what had happened, it's not easy. You know, your experience is lacking. You have not suffered in that way. But you want to say something about it. You want to make a statement because you feel the need. And therefore, you pick up that subject. I did a lot of drawing, I did a lot of trials. Over 3-4 years, I was trying to say something about that. Ultimately, that painting in 96, I could complete that painting on the riot that happened in 92. So this is the way in which they kind of, the subject matter is all the time pressing on you from all sides. But you have to find, as I said earlier, ultimately you have to find a form that will contain that subject matter. And it should not become like cry against, not a propagandist thing.
Interesting. So in my understanding, I did one biography episode with Ramu Ramanathan or Vijay Tendulkar, and even Satyajit Ray movies. So if you look at, in your case also, like paying the bill painting, you guys have tried to communicate or tried to express something which is really next door, like a common man. And like these seem to be the subject of interest. So what do you think makes your painting so relatable? Like how come, I mean, this makes your painting relatable, but like a common man is most of the time like non-cognizant about it. So how do you like put that into perspective? Okay, I'm making something obviously for the expression, but it has to reach the common man to be sensitive. But these elite galleries, you know what I mean, right?
So yes. I think one of the things that I've always told myself, since I have always been a painter of people, what I've always felt is that the people that I paint, the people who are the subjects of my paintings, should be able to identify themselves in those paintings. In that sense, I do not want to be talking to a third person about someone. I want to be talking to that person about himself. This I've always kept in mind in some sense. And what it means is that you approach the figure with a certain respect for his autonomy. That you will tell him, this is another person. He has his own life. He has led a life that you do not know completely. You are only trying to understand it. And if you want to try to understand it, you must approach it so that he can see that this is his life. He can see his life within this representation. So through this attempt, because of this attempt, I think people find that they can relate to my work. Most people I find, a lot of people from any class, they find my work that they can relate to it. The question of the common man not being cognizant of it, I think is that mostly they do not get an opportunity to see works of art. They, in their daily rush of life, they have no time to set aside for art and the sex demons, unfortunately. But if that art is taken to them, then definitely they relate to it. Now, of course, there will be differences that certain people are more sophisticated, they understand art better, they know the history of art, they can relate to it in a different way. And certain people will relate to it in a simple way, according to the subject, according to what is shown. But all of these people, any way they can relate is important, I think. Yeah. So it is not only people who are seeing it in a sophisticated way that, of course, ideally the people who do not have education should also be able to develop in that way. But my work is relatable, I think, because of the way in which I approach the human figure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking to that person about himself. That is a kind of ideal way of approaching the human figure.
Correct. Maybe one of the reasons is that, the human forms in your paintings are doing like mundane activities, right? So, there's some sense of innate dignity which is transpiring through your work of art. So like while performing like regular chores of life. So I wanted to understand like how, it's a difficult question to ask also, like, is it a function of the expression? Is it the function of observation? Is it the function of, how does it transpire?
Firstly, I'm very interested in observing people doing their daily activity, their daily job. I find it very interesting. And I find that one can learn a lot about life itself, of the meaning of life, by just this ordinary life, daily life in front of you. Just this observation is important. But about this, what I find is that any gesture that someone is making, for example, a woman is sitting and making chapatis, or let's say that paying the bill, yeah. She's going there, she's turning around, she's looking in her purse. All these gestures have a specific meaning, yes. They all have a functional meaning. You can understand them completely. What is this woman doing? She's looking into her purse to see if there is money or to put back something or something like that. That is the functional way in understanding. But that gesture that woman is performing, or let's say a man is pulling a cart. Now a man is pulling a cart, you can understand all his muscular movements, the way in which he's bent, all that, by saying that, yeah, he's pulling a cart. But that movement that person is doing, or that woman is doing, goes beyond that immediate functional meaning. And it suggests something about being human. The human condition itself is somehow encapsulated in these ordinary acts. So it doesn't have to be something, for showing motherhood, people used to always think a mother feeding her child. Now this, of course, is obviously gives you an idea of motherhood, love, all that. But even something like washing your face. A woman is washing her face, throwing water with both hands on her face. This act, though it can be explained by just me washing her face, But this act expresses something about our condition, our being human. And that is why it gives it that kind of, as you said, it gives it that kind of dignity, or it gives it some meaning beyond the ordinary. That is the, I feel, that is the reason.
Oh, I think it's lot of food for thought for me to consume and reflect back upon. I'm going to listen to this again. So speaking about the earlier question and also the one when we started, it's about making it relatable and making it, you are finally expressing so that there's some audience who's going to look at it, some person who's going to look at the painting and probably introspect or just appreciate the art in general. So
yes,
and we hear a lot of this word, which is that art should create a dialogue in the society, right? But I mean, this could be a naive question, but how does these dialogues then reach to the masses? Because from my experience, which is very limited, but these paintings are generally seen in elite galleries. Although you have traveled, your paintings have traveled the world, but in certain parts of Maharashtra as well, in rural villages. But still, I'm very curious to know that what are these dialogues and how are they reaching the masses and then creating some sort of, I wouldn't say movement, but at least being getting sensitive to certain aspects of our environment.
What happens is that paintings, visual arts, is a medium which needs to be seen in a certain way. I mean, for example, paintings need to be lit properly. They have to be, you know, so it's not like a poem or a novel that anyone can sit anywhere and read. So that creates a certain problem that they have to be exhibited in certain kind of galleries and things like that. And it is true that most people do not enter into private galleries. But for example, for me, I have always tried to show all my exhibitions, even if they were in private galleries, have also been shown in Jahangirad. Now in Jahangirad Gallery, in 1 week, I will get 10 times or more the audience that I will get in a private gallery, even in a month. So that way one can, you know, and of course, as you mentioned, I have tried in various ways. For example, I was painting paintings, landscapes in Thana in Pokhran. You know, this was in the late 80s. Then I had exhibitions of those paintings in Pokhran, in a municipal school, in a factory shed, even on a roadside, and 5 or 6 exhibitions like that in a shop. So that is true, because for 3 years I was going to that area, painting that area, and people used to gather to look at me painting. So they knew that this artist comes in a scooter, sits here and does some paintings. They had seen me. Then after 3 years, they actually saw an exhibition at all these paintings together. So they had got, they developed some kind of understanding of what art is, how it is done. Then I gave them a pamphlet show, telling them how these paintings can be seen in Bombay, in the museum, or here or there, whenever you can go. So trying to educate the people is always, and the exhibition that you mentioned, traveling to 8 cities in Maharashtra, is also, in that sense, an educational project. 30 artists, one took them all their work around 8 cities and had lectures, had seminars, various things to educate people. People are hungry for this. It's not that people are not interested. They're very much interested and very much hungry, but they don't get the opportunity. And that, unfortunately, I do not know whom to, you cannot say, but for example, our museums don't do enough of outreach. And we have so many few, very few museums in the first place. So it's a difficult thing that, and in our school education system was not paying enough attention to art education. So all these various things are there.
Sir, I have one last question. I mean, it's been just an amazing experience to hear you and wish like this conversation keeps going on. But like you've been drawing Mumbai tirelessly and like crowded, chaotic scenes. I mean, like these scenes are clearly depicted in the work. Like if you have to start all over again, which city would you pick and why? I mean, this may sound like a typical media type question, but it's a genuine one to understand, like,
yes,
what will it feel to start all over again with, like, will it be like, I mean, this stemmed from understanding that if you were in Japan, like Sudhir Patwardhan draw something super minimalistic or what will be the,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, I mean, it would definitely be quite different.
Mm.
I would say that, like, I came to Mumbai in the early 70s. Mm. And I immediately, the city kind of took hold of me almost. So I was completely, taken up with this city. But in the 70s, the city was very different from what it is today. Mm. And over the last 40 years or more, I have depicted the changes that the city has gone through in some sense, you know. And gradually after the 90s, especially, the city has changed drastically. And I would say that the kind of attachment to the city, that a city of Bombay that I had in the 70s, 80s and 90s, today I feel that I do not have that kind of close attachment to the city. So this may be both things, that for one thing, I myself have grown old, so then things change when you grow old. Mm-hmm. And other thing is that the city has changed in a very different way. So if I were to start again at this time, what I am today, I would probably think that I would not want to be painting in this city. I probably would want to be painting in some smaller city where things are changing in a different way, where you can still grasp the whole economics and the sociology and the psychology of people and everything. Somehow you can still grasp that. So probably that might be, If you give me the choice, okay, smack back at you.
Wow.
I would probably. But it's difficult to say. I mean, it's that my whole career is so much linked to this city that it is difficult for me to, in that sense, break away from it also.
Actually, it's really wonderful. But we left the one question in the starting is that how do you stop? Where do you stop? When do you stop? And I'm particularly interested in understanding that when you stop, the next painting, what if it's a continuum? What if it starts again somewhere there? So I'm personally intrigued with this idea of like, when do you stop? Like, how do you stop? If you can share more details about it. Yeah.
Yes. In most cases, as I was saying, like for me, starting the painting starts from two points. There is an external experience of an external world, and there is an inner need. And when these two come together, that is the point at which, in a sense, there is a sense of heightened awareness. And if you reach that point in the painting, you feel that, yes, now I have achieved both an understanding of myself and an understanding of the outside. That is the point at which ideally you stop. You know?
Mm.
But this is not a situation that happens every time. And many times you are left a little confused. Whether you have really said what you want to say, whether there is something left unsaid. And then that goes on to your next question. That in many times you feel you have reached something incomplete. You have reached, but there is nothing you can do about it. You cannot improve upon this. then you start another painting, which in which you try to push this to another level. So that is another way that you can do. So there are various things like that that can happen. But ideally, I would say the painting is the one that is telling the artist. You know, that this is even one stroke more, even changing one small thing is going to harm the painting. And sometimes you don't realize and you actually do it. And after you do it, you realize that, yeah, now I have to go back. I have to wipe that out and I have to go back. So those are the kind of processes through which this completion happens. But I think there's too much kind of myth attached to this idea that and every time the artist reaches a point at which the painting just says it's perfect. Yeah. Many times it is not. Many times you realize that you could have done something else, you could have done something more, you know, but you can't. You cannot push it anymore. So many statements, many works of art, and this is true of novels, this is true of cinema, this is true of every art, that no art reaches that state of perfection. Very few works reach that state of perfection where nothing else can be done. But the others, where they do not reach a perfection, they are in fact a stimulus for continuing with that search. You know, that is the way.
I can just wonder and not really connect with it, because I think it's more experiential. You start with that conflict, you start with that 2 points. First, to identify those 2 points at an experiential level is something which I've not personally witnessed. So understanding that first and then reaching a point where they meet and get that small little thought that, yes, this is complete. I think it's a long journey for me to understand, at least. I barely struggle to know when to stop these sort of conversations, because it's just so enriching. So I have a very long way to go. We'll conclude on this note. I don't know how to thank you. It's just wonderful talking to you. And once again, thank you, Sudhir sir, for giving your time. It was real honor speaking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kedar.
Okay. Bye. Take care. Thanks. Bye.
And that's it from today's Gyan session. Catch us on iTunes, Saavn, Stitcher, or any podcasting app you use. Do rate us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Stay tuned for more Gyan on audiogyan.com. Till then, bye.